Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Yeah, get on you, Wallace. Thanks, mate. Sophie Hilditch is with me, the number one expert in South Australian golf. Soph, how was your weekend? Better than mine, I hope.
Why was yours so bad, Hookie?
Single parenting the entire 3 days, Soph, that culminated in when you were out having a lovely time at Pennant Golf, and I was hoping that I could make it out there as well. I spent 4 hours in Seymour College's music centre for a four-hour session of rehearsals and concert for all of these violin kids, including my daughter, who I might add is three and is yet to actually progress to a real violin yet. So my mum, my dad, and me spent 4 hours watching my daughter play in a concert on a cardboard cutout violin. And I can see you laughing. And you know what we were like? We were the parents who were filming it and getting all teared up, getting so excited because our three-year-old was playing with a stick of bamboo and a cardboard cutout, playing violin all along with all of these kids who are actually good at violin, who could actually get a note. That was my Sunday afternoon. How was yours, mate?
Well, that sounds beautiful. I'm ashamed that I missed that. I would have loved. I reckon she can really play a tune on a cardboard violin. I reckon she's almost going to be the next best SA violinist we've ever seen. But
I took her to her cousin's to get her hair done. She had to dress up in all these fancy clothes. And yet there she was the whole way through playing a cardboard violin. I'm getting a lump in my throat watching her, and I'm filming it and sending it out to all the relatives long lost. So yeah, that was my Sunday afternoon. Magnificent.
No, that was beautiful. Well, I had a very golfing weekend. Of course I had Pennant Golf on Sunday, but I was also helping out down at Royal Adelaide. I've been mentoring a few young women who are coming to the game for the first time, and we had our little celebration as well as they wrapped up the fairways program. So it was very, very golf-fueled, but I love when it's golf-fueled, so I'm not complaining.
Isn't it wonderful? And you get this experience a lot. Just when someone takes up the game for the first time and they just finally elevate a ball or really genuinely flush one, and just the look on their face when, I mean, we all have it and then we all lose it again, don't we? But for the first time, when you actually see what's in your brain actually go out of your shoulders, down your arms, out the end of your hands and through the club and into the club head onto the back of the ball, what an experience that is just to be a part of that.
No, it's an absolute experience. And talking about coming to the game for the first time, I'm actually new to darts. You're aware of this. Yes. I fell in love with world championship darts, and I found out that women and men compete in the same tournament, and I've all of a sudden just become enthralled by it. Had my first darting injury on the weekend. Oh, no. Yeah, I flicked myself with a dart on my finger and I drew blood, and it really actually quite hurts. So that's actually my other aspect to my weekend, is my first ever darting injury.
We've kind of got sidetracked here, but I'm going to run with this. Do you have a walk-on music? You know how all great darts players have walk-on music?
Well, my walk-on music for every single sort of sport would be Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain. It's just 100% my walk-out music.
That was the answer I needed.
Should we get this show going?
Let's get moving. And you know how we start. We started off with Sophie Starr.
Sophie Starr this week. Well, actually, I looked at Hookie's manual. I looked at it. I looked at all the free passes that I've been giving him, and I thought, yep, I'm going to take a leaf out of his book.
Ripped every page out of it, didn't you?
100%. And I have gone Tea Tree Gully Golf Club. So not a person, not a star, a club, but they have become the 200th club in Australia to sign up to the RNA Women in Golf Charter. And I think that is a huge accomplishment for Tea Tree Gully. They have an astounding female program there. We've actually managed to steal, unfortunately, a few of their female juniors.
Have you ever?
We have, yes, who've gone on to be magnificent. So, Tea Tree Gully, welcome to the RNA Women in Golf Charter. I think it's about time you joined up, and I'm so excited to see what you do and how you come, and you come with all the other clubs that have also joined and start to promote women in golf, which they're already doing. To be honest, they're already doing it, and they didn't really need to sign up to the charter, but I think it is a stamp and it shows that they're there for females in golf.
Lovely, Soph. I was a little bit worried when you started on Tea Tree Gully. I thought you were about to clip them for going down 7-0 to the Grange in the Simpson Cup on the weekend. We will get to that a little bit later on. Katie Sowell, one of the youngsters that you talked about, who went from Tea Tree Gully to Royal Adelaide. She won the club championship at Tea Tree Gully as a 9-year-old. Can you believe? She was doing cartwheels down the fairway on the way to winning the club championship. incredible. Well, I'm going to have to take another free pass card here, Soph, because after the events of today at the Junction Oval in Melbourne, I cannot go past Alex Carey as my Ben's best for this week. South Australia has won the Sheffield Shield back-to-back. It's the first time in the history of Sheffield Shield cricket that South Australia has won it back-to-back. Sophie, in the first 45 years of the Sheffield Shield, there was three teams that played it. It was three teams involved and we never won it back-to-back once. And then for the next 25 years, it was a four-team competition. We had a guy called Bradman playing for us and we still never won it more than once in a row. So the fact that we've won it twice in a row is pretty incredible. I was very comfortable with Nathan McAndrew being named player of the match in the Sheffield Shield final, but I can't go past talking about my old teammate. Alex Carey actually played his first game when I was captain of Glenelg, and there's a story to that I'll share with you some other time. But Alex Carey, 100 in the second innings of this match to go with the 100 in the second innings, might have been the first innings. Well, it was in the Sheffield Shield final last year as well. His wicket-keeping was exemplary, but he just quasi-led that team. Nathan McSweeney is obviously the captain, but his performance once again was absolutely outstanding to steer South Australia from 7 down with a lead of just 59 runs to get us out to a lead of 196, which was more than enough in the end. So huge thrill for South Australian cricket. We're all going to be in Rundle Mall tomorrow at 4:30, Soph, so I'm really looking forward to that experience. I did it last year. I'll be emceeing it once again. It is just a great celebration of South Australia. The Premier will be there. The Lord Mayor will be there. We'll have a heck of a lot of fun. But I could not go past Alex Carey as being Ben's best for this week, mate.
I think that's very fair, Hookie. And in fact, I predicted this one would be coming. I predicted Alex Carey would be your pick. So I saw this. So I'm not even going to yellow card you. I mean, back to back, that's incredible. And Alex Carey really led that way.
Yeah, 100% he did. Let's get the conversation back onto golf. We're going to start at the top of the tree and just have a conversation about what happened in the LPGA over the course of the weekend. It was the Ford Championship presented by Wild Horse Pass. I don't know how they come up with all of these crazy names. I think they're always trying to get two sponsors in for the price of one. Hyju Kim won it for won a tournament for the second week running, which is pretty incredible. So tell us what happened.
Well, I had to really blink twice, Hookie, on this one when I started to watch it because it was the two horses again. It was Hyju Kim and Nelly Korda. Back at it again. Nelly Korda's had a runners-up 2 weeks in a row, and I thought to myself, am I watching a replay of last week or am I watching a new tournament? Because it was absolutely unbelievable. They're back at it again. And I thought, like, last tournament, Nelly Korda tried to chase her down and she was really on the back foot and she showed some real promise. This week, it felt a bit different. It felt like Nelly Korda almost lost this one. She had bogeys on 9 and 10, and I hate to draw it back to that because she missed two short putts, and I'm starting to feel like she's Scotty Scheffler before he got the mallet putter.
Yes.
Like, the putting is just – her putting stats are woeful, and I know in the LPGA – their stats are all done actually by caddies and it's their caddies' prediction on how far those putts are and all that kind of thing. So it's not that accurate, but it's still accurate enough to show that Nelly's ball striking is, as always, impeccable, but she is missing short putts. And in this tournament, she missed short putts when they mattered and Hyju Kim just jumped straight in and took advantage of that. And I mean, she had an outstanding tournament and it was birdies galore. It was an absolute birdie fest on the LPGA Tour. Not my favorite type of golf to watch. And I was surprised that Jeannie Tuticle didn't have a good week this week. And she's normally one up the top of the leaderboard when birdies are around. But Hyju Kim, an incredible tournament back to back. I'm keen to see if she could do the hat trick. That would be outstanding.
Yeah, so it means three Korean winners on the LPGA Tour so far. Some big names as well. Nelly Korda won the opening tournament. We saw Hannah Green win in Singapore. It was Gino Titical who won in Thailand as well. And now Haiju Kim goes back to back, which is awfully impressive. So the one thing I love, having seen someone go back to back, you look at the results of the LPGA last year, I think they had something like 26 winners across 27 tournaments. You probably know the stats better than me, but I do think it is good for a golfing league if you have someone that separates themselves from the rest of the field. And Haiju Kim has done that. Nelly Korda is clearly back to her best. Hannah Green, we've seen in exceptional form. And Gino Titical is, you know, an absolute Galactico of the game, isn't she? So I just want to see this year, I want to see someone get on a real heater and win 3, 4, 5 tournaments. We saw it historically with Tiger Woods. We've seen it more recently with Scottie Scheffler. And I think that would be great for the LPGA to see someone really elevate once again.
Well, when we saw it with Scottie Scheffler, Nelly Korda was doing the exact same thing on the LPGA. It was almost like they were trading wins. I think Nelly Korda, I'm going to get this stat wrong, went 6 or 7 in a row, pretty similar to Scottie Scheffler. And then in the next year, just completely had a shocker and came off the face of this earth. And we didn't really see her. She wasn't competing in majors. But I'm glad to see that Nelly's back, because I agree. I think these tours really need people to root for, but also people to root against. And people really do like to root against someone who's having an incredible season and wanting to see someone else try and, you know, knock them off that mantelpiece.
The Texas Children's Houston Open was on the men's PGA Tour, Soph, an absolute tearjerker with Gary Woodland holding off the field to win at 21 under. Most people would probably be aware of the story that he had to go through surgery to have a brain tumour removed and really has struggled a bit since then. And it was only a couple of weeks ago that he revealed that he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, which was related to having the surgery. And you can imagine the existential crisis that you would go through if you had to go through the experience of having a brain tumor removed. So he was incredibly emotional when he held off for the win. He'll go to the Masters now again in 2026. He would have missed the Masters this year without that win, because his win in the 2019 US Open, that exemption into the Masters ran out this year. It was extended by one because of the COVID period. But yeah, that would have been his last year. Wouldn't have played this year without this win. So that's tremendous for him as well. And then, of course, he was wearing the footwear of a young girl that had been incredibly sick as well. And he'd had developed a really great relationship with following that US Open win. So it was just a wonderful story, Soph. It was absolutely heartfelt. It was genuine. It was authentic. And maybe I'm going to wheel back to something that I don't need to wheel back to, but when Paul Casey was in tears because the South African crowd was really excited about the fact that there was live golf in South Africa, and that was bringing him to tears, and it was clearly a little bit forced and confected. I wonder if Casey is reflecting on what he saw in the US tour with Gary Woodland and overcoming such an emotional stretch and breaking down on that 72nd green, as you can 100% understand. I mean, it's two different sorts of emotion, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think it was only a few weeks ago that Gary Woodland actually came out and spoke about his PTSD. And it's really brave to do that. And I think a lot of people on the tour probably had no idea that he was continuing to suffer mentally, particularly after having gone through the surgery, which is meant to fix his anxiety. And then actually, no, still, I'm still dealing with trauma related to that. And what was even more interesting, and I felt even brought tears to my eyes when I saw him on the 72nd hole, is PTSD is something that you continue to live with, and it's not just fixed. He was actually really struggling on that Friday with the crowds and called in help from security, and other people within the PGA Tour expressed that he was struggling and got himself to calm down because he asked for help. And I think that is really important, that people suffering PTSD, it's being comfortable to ask for help, and that's actually really hard. And having spoken out 20 days ago or however long it was, he's got the strength to ask for help, but he's still struggling with PTSD. It hasn't gone away, and this tournament was still fueled with it. And it was still fueled with having to ask for help, having to get people around him, having to bring himself out of that to be able to then go on and win the tournament.
And it's not just PTSD that you would encourage people to seek help for. There are all sorts of mental disorders that you can only encourage people to try and expose their vulnerability, because ultimately that is one of the few ways that you can overcome these sorts of things. It's a wonderful segue into our next topic, Soph, which is Tiger Woods and yet another horrendous car accident. Thankfully, no one seriously hurt, as distinct from the previous horrendous car accident when Tiger hurt himself. I think we're all pretty thankful right now that he hasn't hurt anyone else. We understand the situation. There was no alcohol in his system, but he refused a urine analysis test. And that has meant he has been arrested for what the US courts describe as driving under the influence. You're a lawyer, Soph. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, this is the fourth car crash in maybe 20 years. And obviously the last one is in 2021, where he almost had to get his leg amputated. And again, they didn't actually test him, but it's been rumored that he was driving under the influence again in that situation. And again, lucky it was a single car accident that drove off a cliff, and he's lucky to have survived that. And now we've come again and he's done another DUI, or at least he's getting charged with DUI because he refused to do a urine test. It's kind of hard to separate the Tiger Woods of golf and then the Tiger Woods as a person, because I just feel if this was anyone else, we would be severely questioning it and saying, why is this guy still driving around? He definitely has the means to have a driver, to be able to drive him around. There's no reason why he should be driving DUR. And there's no reason that he should be speeding in suburbia as well. It's dangerous for everyone that's around him. And it's now four times. Is this really excusable just because the man is Tiger Woods?
No, and your point is exceptionally well made. I mean, I do think that someone in that situation, whether it's an addiction or whether there is some sort of drug use, the concept of, well, now I'm going to get someone to drive my car for me, just I don't think that is the way the brain necessarily operates if you are battling some sort of substance abuse. And we know he's checked himself into rehab in the past, so this is not a new experience for him. My great concern is, what will the reaction be from the golf and the greater sporting media following what is yet another catastrophic personal life failure from Tiger? Are we going to see just a little bit of hand wringing and then, you know, a bit of few finger waggles and maybe a slap on the wrist, and then we'll all move on and sort of embrace him again? I mean, this guy needs a bit of tough love now. He actually needs to be told that his behavior is destructive, it's unacceptable, and it is going to lead towards not just his own potential death, but the deaths of other innocent people around him. And I do feel like that golf and the golf media and the golf populace generally needs to be a little bit stronger. I was really disappointed with 4Play Sports and Riggs, who is one of the big names on 4Play, who went out of their way to say, no, we're not going to be critical at all of Tiger Woods following this. I think it is absolutely essential that there are organisations like 4Play Sports who are going to stand up and say, we're not going to accept this behaviour anymore. I'm going to be interested to see what the Masters does. That's on in 3 weeks. Now, he may decide to play, but I think that probably is down to about 1% or 2% now. I think the Masters would be well within their rights to politely say to Tiger, we do not need the distraction this year. We want this to be about Rory and his defence and everyone else that's going to be coming to play. We think it would be perfectly reasonable for you to stay away. I think it would then be perfectly reasonable for the PGA of America to come out and say, on reflection, we no longer want Tiger Woods to be the Ryder Cup captain in 2027. That's what they've been clearly angling for all the way through this. But I reckon there needs to be some serious actions taken by those around Tiger, because there's been too many that have enabled him in the past that have just covered for him. I mean, as you said, there was no analysis taken of whether there was anything in his system following that crash in 2021. That was clearly covered up. I think we can all see that and smell that from all the way over the other side of the globe. And I just feel like right now, Tiger's on some sort of path to destruction, and it is incumbent upon the entire golfing world to just come down and intervene and say, that's enough. We are not just going to continue to look the other way because you're Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I think you're right, because the accident that he had in 2017, he checked himself into rehab, and that's almost what made the 2019 win of Tiger at the Masters even more incredible, because he'd obviously gone and worked on himself and then overcome it to an extent. But again, addiction is not something that you just overcome. He went and won the 2019, but when we get to the 2021 and there was this cover-up, he was barely asked any questions about it in the media, and when he was, he just referred them onto the police investigation and said the questions are answered throughout the investigation. And I'm just wary that if he does attempt to compete in the Masters and or even just be around the Masters, those questions are going to be asked, and he's again just going to refer them onto the police investigation and not actually take ownership as to what has happened. But I just, it's a tough one, Ben, because for me, I feel really sad when I look at a character like Tiger Woods. Obviously, I look at Tiger Woods as the golfer and I'm in awe. You cannot be not in awe of this man. He's incredible. He's changed golf forever, and he deserves all the accolades that come with that. But golf seems to be all of Tiger's life, and I'm scared as to what happens if you do start taking away golf from Tiger and he has to face that addiction, what those repercussions might look like for him.
Golf is a sport that prides itself on being played by the rules, and there's honour in the sport. And I just feel like this is golf's opportunity to say, well, there's been too many breaches of the rules, and we're now going to issue some more serious penalties than what we've been prepared to do in the past. It remains to be seen where we'll end up, but I'd like to think that for his own good, there will be some sort of intervention here, because it is long, long overdue. So if let's move on to things that put more of a smile on our face, and that is golf tournaments. And we'll talk about the ones that are a little bit more close to home, in particular the Women's PGA Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia. I will start with the PGA Tour of Australasia. It had its last event of the year. It was simply called the National Tournament, not really creatively named. It was played down at the National at the bottom of Cape Schanck there. The winner was Cameron John, who beat Daniel Gale in a playoff. Both at 11 under at the end of the tournament. Remarkably for Cameron John, that was three wins on the season, and he still didn't win the Order of Merit. That was taken out by Travis Smyth, who did so despite only playing four tournaments. Cameron John played 16 or 17, I think. Todd Sinnott shot 68 to get in for a T4. So he finishes 43rd and guarantees any event he wants on the Australasian PGA Tour next year. Matt Griffin finished T16 and 51st. So that snuck him in to get a full tour card for next year. Everyone 52nd and down has got to go to the final stage of tour school, which starts tomorrow, Soph. So there were some really interesting movements over the course of it. They were probably the main ones. Corey Lamb jumped from 75th to 62nd with a solo seventh, and he avoids having to go right through Q school again, although he'll have a couple of limitations on where he'll be able to play next year. So, yeah, tremendously exciting final round of the year, but congratulations to Cam John, who is going to get some opportunities to play on the European Tour next year. You had a look at the Sand Greens Championship, the World Sand Greens Championship. Who thought we're playing on scrapes for professional golfers? That's what we saw. I know Crystal Blum had a pretty reasonable opening round. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, Liana Azizan-Dorisic has won the 2026 Women's World Sand Greens Championship. It was played at Holbrook at the Servicemen's Golf Club. She finished 5 under par, which for anyone who's ever played sand greens, that is incredible. For those who don't know, the greens, yes, they are literally made out of sand. Sand and oil, when you put that ball on green, you have to then get a rake and rake around it and clear your footsteps and everything. It's incredibly hard. She won it by 2 shots, overcoming a final charge from the 2024 champion Lydia Hall. A couple of Australian women did incredibly well, but like you mentioned, it's Crystal Blum, the South Australian. She finished 4 over, so she struggled after her day one, but that placed her at 16, and an incredible effort from Crystal Blum, and something that she can hopefully take and take off for the start of her season.
That is the end of our national wrap. It is time to How was that for a drum roll, Soph? Pretty terrible. But the highlight of the show is always our pennant reviews, and we're going to start with the Sanderson Cup, which headed to Cooyonga for round three. And I guess the big game, certainly in the lead-up, was the Grange taking on Royal Adelaide. Well, it all went up in flames for your Bob, Soph. A 5-0 drubbing at the hands of the Grange. How do you reflect on that 24 hours on?
Yeah, 5-0 never sounds great or looks great, to be honest. But if you look at some of those games, two of those games went down 18. One of them was Fiona Morrison, who was your pick that should have won or needed to win for Royal Adelaide, I should say. She took Elise Kozlovich down the 18th, and our youngster, Adele Wang, debut for Sanderson Cup, also went down 18. And that was with winning the 17th hole and coming down all square down 18 and just not quite getting it over the line. So whilst it's 5-0 and it looks pretty bad, Royal Adelaide wasn't at full strength. And we're actually only taking positives from the match, which feels a bit silly when you come off 5-0. But if you were around that table at the end of the round, the Royal Girls didn't even seem disheartened at all. It was all talking about what they need to work on to get better for the end of the season and still looking at finals.
Just a couple of things very quickly. Tell me about Adele Wang. Just give us a little bit of an insight into her on debut, and that's a really impressive performance to get it to 18.
Yeah, it's an incredible performance. Adele was in our Pike squad last year and actually on the cusp of making the Pike team. She wasn't a set player in that team. She only played not the whole season, but a few games. But her handicap has just plummeted. It's incredible. She hits the ball a fair way, but God, is she accurate. She has a great head on her shoulders and has actually been selected to represent the junior interstate team. So I'm excited to see what she does over there. That'll be her first time representing South Australia as well.
Yes, which of course I think takes her out for 1 week of the pennant season. I'm not sure if it's week four or week five for you, but yeah, she will have to miss one along with all of the other juniors who are in that boys and girls team. We wish them all the very best. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting scramble to see because there are plenty of star-studded young juniors throughout Sanderson and Simpson Cups are going to be missing later in the year. One other question for you. Amelia Winnie is probably in career best form at the moment. I think she's always been regarded as the number two South Australian amateur behind Reagan, but I feel like that gap is closing right now. You saw her firsthand, how's she tracking?
Yeah, she played incredibly well. Unfortunately for our match, I played very poorly for my first six holes and was three down through six and could never quite recover, but played some pretty solid golf after those few holes. But she's looking in incredible form. She's hitting her driver further. She's making lots of birdies, which is shaping up to be, I mean, great for match play, but also great for her stroke rounds. She's a good head on her shoulder, Millie. I always enjoy playing Millie. I've played her multiple times, so it seems like just second nature to always be paired next to her. She's looking incredible, and I do think she's making a late charge to become one of the better South Australian amateurs we've ever seen.
So if the big recruit, I guess, for the Grange is Caitlin Roberts, who has reinstated her amateur status after turning professional around about 6-7 years ago. It was her first season back in Sanderson Cup since 2019, and she had her first win for the year, and she was good enough to talk to Hooked on Sport. This is what she had to say.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's so much talent coming through, and it's pretty crazy feeling like, you know, definitely the oldest by a long margin in the team. It's a little different from when I was last in. I mean, we had a few younger teammates, but also had like a few similar to my age. So no, it's really good to see, and there's so much talent coming through. It's great to see in South Australia golf, because I know for a little while there was a bit of a gap there. So it's really, really good to see all the talent coming through.
And just to wrap it up, Louise Glennon wasn't part of this team, and she would get a game in any other Sanderson Cup team comfortably. Gee, Grange, from talent and depth, they are really now the obvious ones to beat, aren't they?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, they're undefeated for the season, and they are an incredible team with so much talent and so much depth. Their Pike team is exactly the same as well. They've actually got Lucy Keylock playing it too, which is one of their up-and-coming juniors, and I think she's pretty close to having a spot in that Sanderson team as well. So they are completely envious of how many people they have to pick to play for their Sanderson team. They're a completely strong team. Wouldn't say they're unbeatable, because obviously I'm playing for one of the opposition teams and I can speak from personal experience, Hookie. I've had plenty of seasons where we've gone undefeated in the minor rounds and we still didn't lift up that trophy. You've got to say at the moment they are the front runners.
Grange, I think, did it last year, didn't they? They were certainly top at the end of the minor round and lost their semi-final. So I'm pretty certain that was the case. They certainly went in as one of the favourites and then missed the final. Let's move on. Cooyonga was the host, so therefore they had the bye. The other match in Sanderson Cup was Glenelg and Blackwood. This was a pretty comfortable victory for Glenelg. I'm kind of a bit sad there had to be a loser here, Soph, because the loser is probably out. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Blackwood to make up the numbers from here. They've got a game in hand, so it's not completely out of the realms of possibility that they can make their way back in, but they don't necessarily have an easy draw. I think they've still got to meet the Grange, who are absolutely flying at the moment. 4-1, good win for Glenelg, gets them started for the year. What did you make of this match?
Yeah, I was thinking it was going to be a little bit closer than what it was, if I'm honest, but some of the Glenelg players just had absolutely schmollickings. Sarah Crocker, incredible form. They've moved her up the order to number two. They've dropped Jill down to three, and she had a 7-6 win over Gail McPherson. Maya had a 4-3 win over Hannah Constance, and Rebecca Hughes coming into the squad for the first time, because I know Grace Ferrier is currently somewhere in Europe having a lovely holiday and not returning for the rest of the season. She had a 5-4 win over Angela Masters. So they really had the game all sorted. And those other two games did come down to the wire. It was 3-1 to Zoe Manton over Ebony. And Jill Hodge only just lost to Isabel Watson 2-1. So those two games were definitely close, but the other two, three games were absolutely smashings and all went Glenelg's way.
Isabel Watson was the only winner for Blackwood on the day. It's her first ever win at Sanderson Cup level. We caught up with her after the round. This is what she had to say.
Yeah, it was a really good day, actually. Really good game. It was a tough battle in the end, though, but managed to come out on top. Yeah, I was 5-up Dormy and then sort of started to struggle a little bit towards the end. Yeah, just kind of lost it. And then she turned it on. She started playing really good as well. I drove the ball really well. I also putted probably the best I've putted in a really long time as well, so that saved me on quite a few holes. Penicu have been amazing. Everyone's so lovely, so welcoming. It's a really good team environment, and the club's been so supportive as well. Been really keen for me to play pennants, and yeah, it's just been really lovely.
So that was young Isabel Watson there. It was very good of her to spend a bit of time with Hooked On Sport. Blackwood, of course, after Easter, will take on your mob, Soph. I tell you what, they will be absolutely desperate to land a blow, so you better come prepared.
Yes, we were definitely having to come prepared because it's also going to be a must-win game for us. So it'll be a bit of a battle, and I know Blackwood haven't got off to the best start this season, but they are still a strong team, and I expect they will be coming armed and ready to go.
Let's swing across to the Simpson Cup now. The opening match of the day was, because it was at Cooyonga, it was Cooyonga hosting Glenelg. Kiwi got it done 4-3 in a bit of a thriller, this one. So if they did it differently as well, because the three most reliable guys for Cooyonga have traditionally been Heath Riches, Lockie Oakes, and Malachi Marshall. All three of them lost, and they still managed to win, which is just testament to their depth and capacity to always find a way.
Yeah, actually, Hookie, I think pat on our shoulders. We called this one 4-3 Cooey's way, and I said Freddie Castle had to get the win. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now, which doesn't often happen when we're doing these predictions. But no, it was definitely a tight game. I spoke to a few of the Glenelg boys at the end of the round who were good enough to go out and watch some of their Glenelg Sanderson girls out competing. And they came and they were still, you know, very pleased with how they played, very pleased with the game, and still had high hopes for the rest of the season. And I don't blame them because it was tight and it definitely still could have gone either way.
I spoke to Heath Riches very briefly after, well, it was actually today that I caught up with Heath. He, interestingly enough, said he's working on a couple of swing changes. So we know that he's gone backwards a little bit with his own game. He took on Nick Wake, who is just Mr. Reliability at Glenelg. He said it was an incredible match. He only lost because he was a couple down. I think it was 2-1 in the end. He was a couple under and lost. He said that Nick was just in absolutely superb form. And you know what it's like sometimes, Soph. You can play pretty well and the person who just happens to be against you plays better. And that's kind of how it played out for Heath. We did have a conversation with Jeff Brennan. He's the club captain at Cooyonga and an excellent golfer, often plays seven for them. And this is what he had to say after their win over Glenelg.
Yeah, definitely. Glenelga, you know, great, you know, competition for us, and we always have very close matches against them. So, you know, it was fantastic to, you know, get a win over the line. Pretty crucial given that we're right at the stage where, you know, our season was at the crossroads, to be honest. So it was good.
Jeff Brennan there on Cooyonga's 4-3 win over the Bays. We'll move on to what was the big blowout result of 2026. So for the first 7-0 rip apart of another team, it was the Grange who took down Tea Tree Gully. A pretty incredible result in a high-quality game. We tipped the Grange here, but were you surprised by the depth of the margin?
I did not see 7-0. In fact, I was shocked when I was out there playing and Blair Christie, who is boyfriend to Millie Winnie, came out to watch her match and told me what had happened. And I'm still shocked. 7-0 against Tea Tree Gully. I just did not see that coming.
All credit to Tea Tree Gully. And I probably explained this to you last week that I think if they go down here, they'll be relaxed. They won't bother about it. They won't get too uptight. Got a very lengthy text from their team manager, Dylan Reid, this morning, who said, hey, listen, look, we went down, we had a tough day, but I just want to provide you some insight because I don't want to be the team that only talks when we win. I want to be able to provide you some information when we lose as well. He gave me a great little story about the match between Grant DeBias and Jackson Bogdowski. Mm-hmm. They traded birdies all day. Between them, they had 8 birdies and an eagle through the front 9 alone. And you saw what those greens were like at Cooyonga. They were pretty treacherous. So that is impressive golf. Bogdowski holed out from about 100 metres for eagle on the 9th hole. I mean, the 9th hole is a pretty short par 5 by these guys' standards, so Bugsy probably got himself in a little bit of an awkward spot somewhere, but still to hole out for a 3 is pretty incredible. So DeBias was 3 under par and 2 down at the turn. It was a pretty incredible match. Anyway, so firstly, to Dylan Reid, thank you so much for making that sort of extra contribution, in particular when your team hasn't had the day that it necessarily wanted to, but he was more than happy to provide all of that information. But yes, I think Tea Tree Gully are experienced enough and smart enough to know, yep, we've gone down 7-0. Not everyone had a great day, but a few of us had really good days and just got beaten by better players on the day. So I think they will put it in their pocket, forget about it, and have a week off and come back bigger and better next week.
I think you're exactly right. And I think your impression of what Tea Tree Gully came into this, which was going to be a bit of a, you know, a calm attitude, I think they're going to approach next week exactly the same with the same approach. And, you know, 7-0, it did, again, some of those games, you know, going down 18, they were close, and it sounds like some of those boys played exceptionally well. And sometimes just you playing well, someone else is playing a bit better and you cannot control that.
Ross Steepman had his first win of the year. He's been playing up the order, and that was a bit of a surprise to me. I call him the crowbar, you know, just impossible to break, Ross. Every time you think you might have him beaten, I watched him come up 18 against Billy Cawthorn last week, and just unbreakable, Ross Steedman, just a real tough customer. So very pleased for him. He's been very good to us as well. So pleased to see him get a win individually. We expect plenty more from him. But congratulations to the Grange. 7-0 winners over Tea Tree Gully, and they certainly now are comfortable premiership favourites. I caught up with Mark DeMarcy after the round. This is what Dimmer had to say.
No, I think it's possible that the conditions were really, greens were pretty firm. So possibly the conditions of Cooyonga probably match our course more than it matched theirs. So, I mean, Bainesy was at number 7. Like, he's a pretty solid number 7. Mm. So he was 6 up through 10.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we had a few guys that were pretty solid, and I think they were probably a little bit off compared to where they had been with their results, I suppose. So, yeah, I wasn't expecting, you don't win 7-0 very often, and I wasn't expecting to do it against a team that's unbeaten.
So for Royal Adelaide took on the Vines in what was a really key match. These two teams were just out of the four, I beg your pardon. They were sitting 5th and 6th respectively. And Royal Adelaide would have restored a lot of faith with how their 26th season is progressing, because that was an excellent 5.5, 1.5 win, including some guys who really landed a massive knockout blow. I'm thinking of Alex Pacifico in particular.
Yeah, Alex Pacifico getting that 3-2 win over Sam Earl is huge. It's massive to knock the king off his throne. I think that is an incredible win for Alex Pacifico.
He might be having to abdicate from the throne, so yeah, that could
Don't think abdication is dead.
Long live the king.
I don't think abdication is coming quite yet, but he's on warning that it might be happening. But no, Alex Pacifico, that's a huge win. But you've got to look at Billy White. 6-5 from the kid. That is incredible from the young boy and a player that I'm definitely looking out for the rest of the season.
While we're talking about the king, Sam Earl, he's lost twice in 2 weeks. And I think I've made the point in the article that that's about as rare as finding good public Wi-Fi. So I couldn't believe that the king's crown has been dented for a second time in 2 weeks. But what about his opponent, the supermodel? There's no prettier player in pennant golf than Alex Pacifico. What a massive win for him. He's up at one this year. I mean, he really wasn't a regular in the Simpson Cup team 2 years ago. Had a great year last year, stepped up to number one. Loves being there, loves being up for the fight, and that's his biggest scalp in history. I did catch up with Alex after the round. This is what he had to say.
It's taken me a few weeks to get comfortable playing it in the one position, but it's the last probably 3 weeks I played. We'll be round three at RA. I've started to sort of hit my straps there, and since then I felt very comfortable, and I'm just really embracing the challenge that he's playing at number one in the Simpson Cup.
And so if the final matchup of the day was, I guess the cellar dwellers in a way, it was Mount Osmond versus Thaxted Park. Now, Mount Osmond last week hadn't had a win at Simpson Cup level in 28 years, and they've had two in 2 weeks. They take down Thaxted Park 5.5, 1.5. Pretty much confirms that they are going to stay up. It would take an inordinate mathematical anomaly for them to miss from there. Thaxted Park, of course, look for everything that they're going to be the team to go down now. They've got a really tough draw home, and they're going to have to win them both 7-0, 7-0, and hope that Mount Osmond lose 7-0, 7-0 to have any hope as well. But what an impressive performance from the battlers from up on top of the hill there. Mount Osmond, 2 weeks in a row, they beat Cooyonga last week, and then they get it done at Cooyonga over Thaxted Park. Hugely impressive.
Hugely impressive, incredible effort from the Mount Osmond boys. Again, though, I'm feeling a little bit for Thaxted at the moment because some of those games were so tight and so close. And honestly, they all basically went Mount Osmond's way. So credit to Mount Osmond, but I'm feeling a little bit for Thaxted because whilst, yes, it looks like they're going to be the team to get relegated, they have really given it a fight this season so far.
So you've picked that up really well. So Dan Searle goes to the 17th over Pacey Lyle. Ken Chan goes to the 17th over Lockie Matthews. Dylan Wan goes down on the 17th to Jake Eady. Nick Hill gets up on the 17th over Brett Eady. So that's the first four matches. All of them go to the second last hole. Zach Fielding, 3-2. Ben Walters, 4-3. Andrew Edwards halves with Matthew Rolton. Hey, Ben Walters, what an amazing story this is, Soph. He played for Mount Osmond 2 years ago, had 5 matches, 0 wins. So he's come into this year. He went down in the first match. Since then, he's gone win, 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 win. Super impressive, as good as anyone in the competition right now. He is one of the reasons why Mount Osmond is going to stay up and play Simpson Cup in 2027. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Yeah, for sure, because I think we looked at Todd was mentioning some scores about halfway through and a lot of the games were a bit dicey. And I think at one point we were down 5 and only up in 2. So, two or three blokes come from behind to get good wins. And, yeah, I mean, to back up from last week was as good as it can be for us. So to get a couple of wins on the board at Simpson Cup levels, great.
So what's your takeaway from Mount Osmond and Thaxted Park?
Well, I think Mount Osmond are setting themselves up beautifully and they've really put a stamp on the Simpson League this year. They've shown why they've been promoted up to Simpson and they definitely deserve a place in the Simpson League. And look, I think we could be expecting a bit more from the Mount Osmond boys and potentially another win.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. The one thing that stood out to me, Ken Chan wins at number 2, Dan Searle wins at number 1. That's Dan Searle's first win for the year. Dan is a guy that's, I think he plays about a round of golf a fortnight outside of the opportunities that he gets to play in Penrith. But there he is fronting up at number one week in, week out. He's taking on Sam Earle. He's taking on Joel Durnford. You know, he's taking on Chris Austin at Tea Tree Gully. And this is a guy who isn't putting in anything like the reps, but is, you know, standing up at the table, putting the hand out and trying to wrestle the other bloke's arm to the ground. So good on him for getting a win up at number one and two. Mount Osmond have been pretty clear that, you know, they don't flirt with their order, but they really need their lower lights, their 4, 5, 6, 7 to get the job done for them. So to get it done there at one and two, Ken Chan's a member at Cooyonga, so you'd expect him to know his way around what is essentially his home course. I just really admire the fact that, yes, they did it, and they did it a slightly different way with getting a win at one and two.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic, Hookie.
So if you've got a week off this week for Easter, are you going to be playing some golf, or are you going to try and get a little break and get away from it for a few days?
No, I'm going to be playing and I'm going to be practicing. I've got a few swing changes that I'm going through at the moment, so that's going to, what I'm going to be working on over the Easter long weekend.
You and the high priest of Lockleys, Heath Richards, both working on your swings, you two.
You got to keep working on it to keep improving. Hookie, how about yourself? What are you up to?
Oh, I've got a lot of work on, I'm afraid, Soph. So it's a big week for me with the South Australian cricket team. We'll have the Rundle Mall presentation tomorrow, and then the Danzy McCauley medal is, like, you know, the best and fairest awards on Wednesday night. And I've got a fair bit of work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, or something like that. So, yeah, I've got a bit of a nasty schedule. So I actually got out and played golf today, Soph, which was a rare one for me. Actually, can I just tell you a little brag to wrap up our show? I did have a hole-out eagle on the last hole at Royal Adelaide today, and I'm a little bit disappointed about it as well, and I'll explain why. We were the last group home before a corporate day was about to go out. So the Hellenic Golf Club, hello to the Hellenic boys. Hope you had a great afternoon out there at Royal Adelaide. I'm sure many of you are listening, and I've got a bone to pick with all of you. There was about 120 of you all out around, surrounding the 18th green, on the practice green, on the veranda there at Royal Adelaide. I've hit my gap wedge in. It's gone one bounce and disappeared. And I thought, oh, well, there's a big crowd there. They're all going to roar and clap me and everything like that. Not one murmur at all. And I thought, oh, maybe it's just sort of gone behind a little dip or something, or it's just hidden behind the flag. I thought that went in. I cannot believe it. I'm so disappointed. That obviously hasn't gone in. Otherwise, someone would have said something. Anyway, walked up onto the green, can't see the ball anywhere, looked in the hole, there it was. 120 members of the Hellenic Golf Club have missed my hole-out eagle, and I am absolutely filthy about it.
They've either missed it or they saw Ben Hook hit it and just thought, nah, not worth a clap.
They saw Ben Hook hit it and thought, well, we expected him to put it pretty close. Anyway, so that's a wrap on this show. Always a good to chat to you, mate. Love talking Pennant Golf with you. Love talking all golf with you. We're going to talk Anwar in the next 24 hours because our very own Reagan Denton is going to be teeing it up at the Champions Retreat golf course ahead of what we hope to see her in the final round at Augusta National on Sunday morning our time, which will be Saturday afternoon over there in Augusta, Georgia. So looking forward to that conversation. And of course, you'll be providing all of the expertise and insight there. In the meantime, have a good night, mate. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks so much, Hookie. See you tomorrow.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.